granddaughters, bunch of cars.
Welcome back to Action RC, the podcast series taking you inside RC racing both now and over the 40 plus years of its history. My name's Scott Guide and I'm your host here on the show. This week, something a little different. We're just going to take a short episode today, but take some time to put our analyst hat on. I want to take a quick look at a couple of the big races from the weekend. Not so much a full race report, but just noticing some of the interesting things that we're seeing in these big races. And then something of a mid-season recap of the podcast, reflecting on the stories that we've heard to date, some of the highlights from the season so far, and so on. You get the drift. I hope you enjoy the show. It seems like all year the anticipation for the Dirt Nitro Challenge has been at fever pitch, and that's where we'll start today. DNC is always such an important early season indicator of where form lies, who's gelling with new chassis or tyre or motor combos. And this year really seems to have stepped that up a notch in terms of anticipation. Particularly, we've seen quite a few of the top European drivers headed over and some of those big name shifts that we've all been talking about over the off-season. I don't want to get into a full race recap here. You can head over and listen to the guys at the No Name RC podcast, where not only have they already done a one-hour kind of catch-up episode, but I'm pretty sure we'll get a three-plus hour blow-by-blow story and analysis. They do that so well. Those guys are at the race, and they'll get into the details super well. But a couple of observations from a distance as I watched on over the weekend. First, massive effort by Joey Christensen and the DNC team to pull off what, from a distance, looked like the miracle of getting this race done in 4 days of rain. Building a second track under cover, a phenomenal effort. And that track was something pretty interesting. Small, rough, fast. It felt almost like a cage fight. I'm not sure too many people would have chosen it over the main track, given a choice. But when the alternative is to sit in the pits for 4 days looking at a flooded track, well done to the DNC team. And boy, did that little track turn on some incredible racing. The race itself does throw up some pretty interesting observations. One of them being that you could argue we still don't have a really clear picture of the 2023 pecking order. The conditions were so unusual, the situation so strange, qualifying threw up some pretty strange results. No more so than David Ronnefelk, for example, having a really tough time leaving him well down the order. So maybe we're not quite clear yet on how some of those main silly season changes have played out. Tebow came good a little bit over the weekend in the finals, but otherwise the Miyako team had a rough run. Cav seems to still be coming to terms with the WRC ride. You might have said the same about Mayfield right up until the Sunday buggy final, when things seemed to really click for him in the Techno ride. Tyres are another thing that I think are worth thinking about this year in 8 scale. A lot of change in terms of new or emerging tyre manufacturers, drivers changing brands, drivers within the same chassis team running different tyres. I have a feeling that tyres are going to be a big story this year, and that we might see a lot of swings in terms of results at different races, as some tyres or tyre compounds just work better than others from race to race. Not saying that was a story this weekend, but I reckon that tyre situation, the tyre game, the challenge of finding the right tyre pattern and compound will be something to watch in 2023. In terms of those that impressed, I mean, Canas made it pretty clear why he's one of the best on the planet right now. He's fast in a couple of classes, even in conditions so completely foreign to his normal diet of wide-open European racetracks. Fendt, as usual, was extraordinary. The e-buggy win a masterclass in speed and determination and hanging in there, getting over the top of Canas and a really impressive Mason Fuller. That race is one really worth watching the replay of. You can find those replays over at the Live RC channel on YouTube. That e-buggy final, actually the whole weekend, really reminds me that I've been thinking lately about what makes a good pro-level or championship-level racetrack. Now, I personally don't enjoy rough tracks at all, and I'd want to argue against them in club racing, even regional racing, where we want to encourage newer, less experienced drivers. When it comes to major championship finals, though, there's nothing quite like a rough or at least a really difficult track to keep a race from becoming processional or boring. Whether it's jump sections we saw on the weekend that are right at the limit of what's possible, or a track surface, again, like we saw on the weekend, that deteriorates not only through an event but even through a long final. A track that pushes the pro drivers to the very edge of their ability, I think makes for exciting racing. We don't see a whole lot of passing in touring car these days, and to be honest, not heaps more intense off-road either. But some of those DNC finals threw up a host of lead changes and a lot of opportunities to come back to the front. And at least part of that has to be put at this notion of a racetrack that is really difficult, even for the pros to master. Like I said, I don't want it at my local club every weekend, but when it comes to big championship finals, a track that really is hard to do, hard to race on, hard to stay clean on, it can generate some pretty exciting races. The Truggy final on the weekend reminds us that the cream rises to the top. It's arguable that Ty Tesman's had a lean couple of years, but watching him deal with the track conditions in that final and the intense pressure of Fend and Mayfield was a pretty impressive. An outstanding win in another entertaining race, worth watching. Pretty impressive also to see Canas and Baton running fast in a class that just really isn't raced very much in Europe. The big one, Nitro Buggy, went the way of Mayfield. It's the first really big win with the new Techno partnership and came, you know, despite being on the wrong end of a fuel strategy, needing to make that extra fuel stop. For the longest time in that race, it looked like it was going to be Fend again, and he's been so strong over the last year that the mistakes in the last 10 minutes came as something of a surprise. That track, though, we've already talked about it, so tough as to be impossible to run mistake-free, and Mayfield was just the best over the last 10 minutes. Big battle for the last podium spot between Tesman and Tebow. What was it that we said a moment ago about cream rising to the top? This is another final that is well worth a watch, even if you know how it plays out. The way this race ebbed and flowed, fantastic to watch and worth jumping over onto the Live RC YouTube channel. Check out the action, listen to the commentary, watch the way this race ebbs and flows. There still seems to be something about this race, the DNC, the Dirt Nitro Challenge, that makes it tough for the European guys to show up and go fast with such limited practice time. It's a track that just conditions are difficult. That said, it's been a great start to the season, despite the weather, despite having to run the small track, maybe because of having to run the small track. We're never going to forget this DNC. It comes on the back of the European season opener at Montpellier a couple of weeks ago. Now, the Femke race is just a few weeks away for those in the Australasian Pacific kind of part of the world. And then there's Silver State not too long after that. Lots to look forward to in 8th off-road land. The other big international race this weekend was the long-running TITC Touring Car race. Another traditional early season international that's long drawn some of the very best races in the world to do battle. And like DNC, it seemed even more hyped this year than usual. Maybe that's a sign we really are coming out of this COVID-related lockdowns and travel restrictions and the malaise that's gone with it. It feels like it's going to be a big year of international racing. The TITC was a great way to kick off in terms of a really global touring car race. Again, a couple of things that I noticed on this race on the way through. Firstly, I reckon there's a pretty strong case, and it's not rocket science, to say that Bruno Coelho is straight up the best touring car racer on the planet right now. He's brewing in other classes too, but we just don't see him as often on 8th and 10th off-road racetracks. The start to his season with wins in Cleveland and now TITC remind us just how good he is. Maybe it isn't rocket science to say that, but his absence from the ETS series the last year or two means that he sometimes flies a little bit under the radar. This win and his performance is also a reminder that if he does have time to turn his attention to 10th off-road and do quality preparation for the Worlds, he'll be one to watch at Hobby Action later in the year. An extraordinary talent and a pretty impressive win this weekend. Secondly, a really, you know, something really impressive about the performance from a very strong Japanese squad. 5 in the top 10 in a category that we sometimes myopically think is just the domain of European drivers. It's a good reminder to all of us to keep our eyes open to the talent that is there in other countries as well. So Akio Ishioka, Yamamoto, Jin Sawada, all top 5 with Matsukura also in the final. Maybe it was that the conditions were familiar to them, similar to racetracks at home, I don't know. But any way you look at it, that's a pretty impressive effort for the crew from Japan. Kudos to that bunch of drivers. Great job too by Charvet to make the main on home turf, getting there in front of, you know, luminaries like Ronald Volker, Victor Vilt, Nicholas Lee and so on who were in the B final. Speaking of that B final, from a parochial Australian perspective, great to see Ryan Maker back on the racetrack after a couple of years away and placing high up in the B final. Jesse Davis in that B final as well in a rare electric appearance. In terms of manufacturers, the win to X-Ray, a couple of podiums for Axon, a stack of cars in the final from Infiniti, along with Reinhard's Awesomatics. Wasn't there this weekend, but throw in Orlowski's recent form in the Schumacher, and it's a pretty interesting manufacturer battle for 2023, with some new names and maybe a reshaping of the pecking order in the offing in 10th touring. Finally, watching the finals was a reminder for me that modern touring car racing is really dominated by tyre preparation and tyre management. And there's some really highly technical chassis setup choices going on, and to the outsider it can look a bit like not much is happening. But under the surface, if you watch closely, the drivers are dealing with a lot. Just like in Formula One, for example, there are definitely times when drivers are just not able to push flat out because of the tyre management situation. In one sense, that's a shame, and it's not something we see, or at least see so obviously in some other RC categories. But watching those cars go off late in the run, you know, seeing Coelho having that big slide late in A1 inside the last minute reminds us just what the drivers are dealing with in terms of the car's handling changing over the run. Touring cars are being pushed to the very limit of what the electronics can do, what the chassis can do, and particularly what the tyres can do. And those elite drivers that are managing all of that over the five-minute run, kudos to you. Pretty impressive. In terms of races, the other one that I just wanted to have a quick look at comes here at home in Australia, where all eyes were on the first national-level 10th off-road event for the year with the running of the South Australian Championships in Adelaide. This race was particularly interesting because it offered something of a neutral venue in terms of many of our 2022 Nationals front runners, most of them coming from Queensland, from New South Wales, Sydney and Victoria, where racing in Melbourne. So it was going to be pretty interesting to see how this race shook out at a racetrack that most of those guys didn't have a lot of time on, along with seeing how the fast local crew would stack up against the best from the rest of the country. In the modified classes, this race turned out to be a triumph for Chris Sturdy. He swept both two-wheel drive and four-wheel drive to put an exclamation mark on his Nationals domination in 2022. That race, the 22 Nationals, took place on the unique battleground of Sturdy's home track at Chargers RC. And so while he undoubtedly was the Nationals king in 2022, there might have been some lingering doubts. Did he just win because it was home, that home ground advantage on a particular unique kind of racetrack? This win, this double win in Adelaide in such emphatic style, really does reinforce his standing at the front of the class in Australia on what's a very different kind of racetrack to his usual week-in, week-out home turf. Behind Sturdy, the race for the podium was pretty epic. Again, the finals are worth watching if you track those down on the Team Associated Australia Facebook page, where Andrew Salvaggi live-streamed with commentary the two-wheel drive and four-wheel drive modified A finals. Thanks, Andrew. Mainly those that battle for the podium seemed to feature Sydney's Lachlan Donnelly, South Australian duo Jaden Edmonds and Jack McMillan, and Victoria's Jordan Isagen. Donnelly took a pair of podiums, with third in four drive and second in two wheel drive, and really pushing hard at times. While Edmonds was second in four drive, including one leg win, and Isagen third in four wheel drive. There's some real talent at the front end if modified in Australia, and in this world's year, it'll be really interesting to see these guys go head to head a couple more times before they head off to the worlds. Big win though for Chris Sturdy, really stamping his authority on the event. Really impressive performance in a couple of other areas. One from Sam Muffett, I thought, to make the two-wheel drive modified main. Sam raced junior stock at last year's Nationals, and to put his car in the two-wheel drive modified A final at his first really big national level race in mod, that's pretty impressive to me. Another junior race for Phoenix Eggleton, also impressive, winning the junior class here in Adelaide quite comfortably and finishing top five in the senior four drive stock ranks. There's two young drivers in a hurry, two to watch in Australia as the season progresses. So kudos to the Adelaide RC Raceway crew. It looked like a really fun racetrack and by all accounts an enjoyable weekend. I've heard lots of stories from the Brisbane crew that travelled down to share in it. A control tyre too that made drivers really have to work on setup to get speed and grip from the cars added to the level of interest, I think. Well done, Adelaide. A really good season opener. I think attention turns to Victoria for the Victorian Championships now in just a few weeks' time, when some of those same drivers will line up to do battle again. From here, the international racing season does not slow down at all. This week, for example, It's the return of the Asian On-Road Championship, the first round of the season, first since COVID, taking place in Brisbane, Australia, where we'll see the likes of Mark Reinhardt and Nicholas Lee take on some of Australia's best. Simon Nicholson, for example, Ryan Maker, I already mentioned earlier. Over 200 entries lining up in Brendale in Brisbane over the weekend coming. Same weekend back in Europe, and it's the Mebo race in the Czech Republic, where Coelho will once again square off against some of the very best in that part of the world. Probably only Reinhardt missing. He'll be out here in Australia. If that's not enough, it's all eyes to the US for the first showdown of the season at the world's venue, Hobby Action, with the running of the Desert Classic. There is a ton of interest there in terms of non-US drivers coming to terms with the conditions, tyre choice, whether the world's tyre control situation is known, whether people will choose to use those world's tyres if that's public information, whether it'll be an open tyre race, who knows on the tyre front. I don't think this race, this Desert Classic, will be definitive in terms of what we'll see at the Worlds later in the year. Particularly that tyre situation will be quite different come Worlds time. But it's a pretty interesting first encounter. First chance for some of the European guys to really start finding their way around this Hobby Action racetrack. And a chance for some of the American drivers to kind of strike that psychological blow, to stamp their authority and say, this is our house. You're not going to come here and do it easy. So that's three big races in the next week. That is a massive weekend of international racing. The other thing I wanted to do today was just to take a few minutes to reflect on this second season of the Action RC podcast, on some of the guests we've had on the show and some of the stories they've shared. It's been a delight to be back at it with the podcast for a second season. We first kicked off back in the land of COVID lockdowns in 2020. That time when we were all digging out old race cars and old magazines and old stories and remembering life back in the 80s and 90s, a simpler time. So the podcast has as its origins that time of reflecting on the history of our sport here in Australia in particular in that first season. I'd encourage you to go back and dig into the back catalogue. There's some cracking stories from some real characters. We talked about races and cars that have been so important and influential. And while that history, that looking back, is still a major focus, we've broadened our horizons a little with this season, talking about current events as well as that historical perspective. We've also had the privilege this season to expand beyond Australian shores. And while we'll always have a bit of a focus on Australian racing, it's been a delight to chat with significant figures from across the world, the likes of Robin Schumacher, Rory Cull. What a great chat with Rory, who hadn't touched a race car for something like 30 years, 28 years. Scotty Ernst joined us on the show, Joel Johnson, for a couple of episodes. Those guys have all been so generous with time and insights from across the seas. We did a couple of other interesting things this season as well, taking a look back at a big vintage race, the Vintage Bash here in Australia, what happened at that race, what we learned, what's going on in the vintage scene. We went inside a successful club, taking a chance to chat with the guys from Chargers RC here in Brisbane, Australia, about what a successful club looks like, the kinds of things that the leadership team at Chargers are thinking of. And of course, we dive deeply into the inner workings of Team Associated's Australian race team. What's going on with a race team? Why does a manufacturer have one? How important is it? What are they thinking about? They're the kinds of things we've been chatting about this season. So what have we noticed? Here's a couple of things I've been paying attention to. Firstly, there's no one way to the top. We've spoken to a bunch of people across the podcast in both series who've followed all sorts of pathways to the front end of RC racing. Some started in off-road, you know, that time-honoured kind of the Tamiya first car, whether it be a Hornet or a Hotshot or something like that back in the day. Some have progressed gradually, almost painstakingly slowly. Others have showed speed right from the beginning, right from the off, going fast. We've talked to people who started in 12th scale. Joel Johnson is a classic example. Learning to drive in the grip and power limited days of the very earliest years of that class of racing. Others started right off the bat in 8th off-road, almost the exact opposite. All of those different roads, we've heard the stories, can lead to enjoyment and racing success, world championships, and so on. There's no one way to the top. The second thing I've noticed is that people are significant, coaches and mentors and supporters in particular I'm thinking of here. Almost everyone we've spoken with has outlined the people that helped them early in their careers, spoken about how they want to return the favour or pay that influence forward later on in their own racing journey. It's a good reminder to all of us who have years worth of experience that helping newcomers to the racetrack is such an easy thing to do that offers big returns. What if Jeff Primer hadn't spotted a struggling Josh Payne on his first day at the racetrack back in the mid-90s? Would Australia have been robbed of a 10-time national champion? It's a fair question. And great to hear some of those really experienced drivers talking about wanting to kind of pay that back now, wanting to think about how they can pass on some of their experience, the skills that they've learned, the knowledge they've gathered over the years, and pass it on to new and younger drivers. There's something really rewarding about helping someone find their way on a racetrack and then seeing them enjoy or develop, maybe even win some races. Something for all of us to remember. The third thing I've noticed is that RC really is a big global family. And no matter the country of origin of our guests, the story is pretty much the same. The welcoming vibe at a local club or a racetrack, the fun and joy of competing at bigger regional or national races that comes with time, and then the delights for those fortunate enough to travel internationally to sample cultures from across the world, discovering that RC races are RC races wherever they go. It's a big global family, and some of those big international events, like big national events, not just about finding the winner, also about a gathering of the tribe. I've also noticed a lot of conversation, and I've started to think about the relationship between the engineer and the racer. It's always been important for some people more or less than others, but it feels like it's becoming increasingly important as the years have gone by and as RC has become more and more technical, particularly at that elite level. I mean, we'll remember the story that Joel Johnson shared with us, winning that 1987 World Championship for Tour Drive Off-Road, a class he'd really not put significant time into. And while I'm sure Joel underplayed it a little bit, he told us the story of putting option parts on his car pretty much because he thought they looked good and that he really didn't know what to change to improve the car during the race, just learning to drive it. Only when he started to have success did the Kyosho team send an engineer over to work with him. I fast forward a few years later to his second World Championship, 1992, and he shared with us about having to work incredibly closely with Trinity's car designer, Jim Dieter. Robin Schumacher talked with us about the really close relationship between their engineering team, Schumacher's engineering team, and their drivers, engineer Tris and driver Mikkel Olowski, for example. A close relationship seems to me to be becoming increasingly important in terms of developing cars, finding setups, even just working on the tuning at major championship races. You can bet there were all sorts of conversations between engineers and drivers going on at DNC and TITC this last weekend. Similarly, along the way, we've started to dip into the sometime murky realms of team racing. We got some pretty interesting insights from people like Rory and Joel as to what that elite level of team racing looks like, but also had a look deep inside Team Associated Australian Race Team with Andrew Salvaggi in that episode. I mentioned that a few minutes ago. Andrew helped us to see the mindset that's going on inside the running of a race team, how communication works, how you deal with the highly competitive individual drivers in a team environment, what info can be shared, how drivers might encourage each other, the development of young drivers, drawing on shared knowledge to develop the car, all these sorts of things. Of course, it's possible to be solo and fast, but there seems to be a lot of value in working with others. And there's just that great thing about being part of the tribe, isn't there? And we heard that from almost every guest we've had on the show. How cool it is, how fun it is to be part of the tribe. And those inter-team rivalries that we've already heard some of, and with some of the guests we've got coming up, we'll dig into a little bit further. Finally, I guess I would notice from these first series of interviews or these first conversations in this second series of the show, RC, then excellent local racing, whether that be clubs or privately owned racetracks. We heard the Chargers RC story, but we've heard similar things from others with years of experience, how that welcoming, encouraging, friendly atmosphere at their early visits to a local track helped them stay engaged, cemented the passion for the sport. I mean, there's some big things for us to think about, and some of the other podcasts that I'll mention in a minute dive deeply into the big questions for us in terms of elite level RC racing, race formats, series, championships, promotion, marketing, all of those things. I can't help but wondering whether all of that pales into insignificance next to great quality local racing and an environment that welcomes, supports, and encourages new racers. The future of our sport is not just about what happens at world championship racing or national championship racing. It is, I think, and we've heard this in some of our conversations, to a large degree in all of our hands in terms of helping foster great local race environments. So we're 12 episodes into the second series of the podcast. It's been a blast to record, and I have to thank all of those who've given so generously of their time to sit down and chat with us. Almost no one has said no. Everyone has said yes, like, let's find a time and have this conversation. We'd love to kind of dive back into our own story or the stories of those that we've raced with. Mostly, though, I want to thank you, those of you who've listened, who've come back week after week, who've taken the time to reach out with some feedback. I had a lovely message just today from a listener who just said he was thoroughly enjoying the show, thoroughly enjoying kind of the surfacing of his own memories, and that it's been a part of his kind of determination to get back on the racetrack. It's so encouraging to hear from you when you're enjoying the show. I know what we're doing here is a little bit different to the informal conversations, the kind of fun and the banter that we see on some of the other fantastic RC podcasts around the world. But I reckon there's room for all of the different approaches, and definitely I'm enjoying the people I've had the chance to chat with. On that note, I'm just going to particularly shout out to a few of the other podcasts that I personally really enjoy listening to. The guys at Extra Lap RC in the UK, great fun, along with their fellow UK podcasters at the Grid Talk, and the engineering insights from Tris and Mikko Lalowski and the lads at Eng Racer, a new podcast, that's ENG Racer, are incredible. And there's the wildly entertaining and frighteningly long episodes from the crew at the No Name RC podcast. I guarantee you that I will not ever be releasing a three-hour podcast, but I'm glad they do it. They get into a lot of pretty interesting conversations. There's the deep dives, the deep one-on-ones from Wheel and Trigger, from Brent over at Beach RC. They're worth listening to. And I want to shout out to fellow Aussie podcast Geordie and Guns. Spent a great amount of time last year listening to those guys and shared an episode or two with them. They're a great pair, and I hope that they'll be back on the air soon as this racing season continues. We got a few more episodes in the works, and we hope to keep bringing them regularly. We are interested, of course, in today's racing, and I'm, you know, so interested in what's going to happen over the next few weeks and months in the international season, but also what's going on here in Australia. Some of our episodes will have that flavour, but our main game for the time being is going to be continue exploring the stories and the people, the personalities, the events, maybe even some of the equipment that has shaped our sport. And we want to keep exploring those things through the eyes of those that have been there and done it for year after year. There's so much to learn. So thanks again for listening, for your feedback. If you've got guest suggestions, or if you've got a whole lot of experience and you think you've got an hour's worth of interesting stories to tell, let me encourage you to reach out and make contact. That's it for this week. Just a quick episode. Recap a couple of races, reflect on the last 12 episodes of the pod, and look forward. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I'm going to let you go early, just a half hour this week. Enjoy your week and join me in keeping a really close eye on those international races this weekend. The Desert Classic, the Mebo race in the Czech Republic, and all eyes from around the world will be tuned into Australia for that first race of the Asian On-Road Championship. I'm racing 13.5 Tourer. Thanks heaps to Terry Norman for the loan of a race car. It'll be my first time on a touring car track for about 8 years. I think there's about 70 people in my category, 13.5 Touring. I'll be delighted if I can be in the top half of the field, but mainly looking forward to having some fun on the racetrack. If you're there, come say good day. Otherwise, folks, we will be back with more episodes next week.